like the Olga McKenzie family.
Okay, ladies. Okay, ladies. This is Liz Chappell and Lynn Walker speaking with Linda Skipper at Olara Station on the 10th of May, 2024. Thank you very much for agreeing to this interview, Linda.
Yes,
this is part of the oral history collection for Australia's Open Garden. Oh, beg your pardon. Whoa. Australia's Garden History Society. We have all three known each other in another life sphere. So I'd like to start by asking about the very early history of Olara, going back to the Everett brothers and the first settlement. Just an overview here.
Yes. Olara was settled in 1838 by John and George Everett, and then their third brother came out a few years later, Edwin, and he accompanied McCannis, the first Hereford bull, to come out. And they used to go to Sydney in the early days, and then later on the steamers brought equipment up to Morpeth. So Morpeth became a very interesting part of Olara's history. They'd come up in the steamer, then they'd have to come overland. They came up through the Moonbies, and then they were looking around. They had letters of introduction in those days to a Dr. Bowman at Scone. I think he had a parcel for them. And so it went on. And then they had to go further than any other white man who'd taken up land to find a block that they could call. So it expanded out from the south, people taking up land, and you had to go further. And there was an Aboriginal that took them up towards about where Glenchill is, Langothman, I guess, about now, and said, see you, Olara, meaning look there, sweet water. So they came down into this valley here, and they took up a large piece of land. Then they had to go back down and register it, and it was like a mark in a tree, around a tree there. Boorlong had been already taken up, so they knew the boundary there. So Olara really spread from Langothlin pretty well right down towards Tinga, down through the scrub towards Tinga, towards Bundara.
And the name was taken from a local Aboriginal name for the area.
Meaning Sweetwater.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And so it was very basic in those days. They had to keep going back to Morford, and on the way back they'd buy sheep and perhaps a few cattle and then walk them all the way up. We do have all the sockies and buckies that they originally.
Oh, that's just wonderful. Now, they were also responsible for the first English trees planted here.
Yes, they were. They brought out a couple of acorns in their pockets. I don't know about elms. I'm yet to work out how elms, because they don't have the acorns. You've got that problem as a sucker. And they are huge. Now, the front garden ones, the biggest are the elms, and they were planted in about 1840-50, I don't know. And then, of course, we've got the scarlet oak, the English oak, and the evergreen, the holm oak. They were all the early trees. And then they planted the avenues for the church and on a radiata pines too. They planted at some point, but they've gone now. We've still got all the others.
Now, I understand these are some of the oldest exotic trees in the area, and they have been subject to a lot of study by various people over the years, measuring their girth and so forth.
Well, I don't know whether other people have, but John Everett did when he went back to England. And he had a couple of trips back to England, and he'd measure it. And that is recorded in the thesis. It's been printed somewhere.
Just for the tape, this is Margaret Rodwell's PhD thesis, which will be appended to this interview.
Yes, yes. And the trees now, the tree surgeons have been up, we've had them trimmed a little bit because I was terribly worried about the weight. They are leaning away from the house. Thank goodness the westerly winds have left all leaning away. They are 19 metres high.
Wow.
I think it's metres, not feet. But they're in good order. Now, one interesting thing that happened just recently, we're getting out of the history a bit, but I want to talk about that. We had met when the last big drought broke in 2019. We had a terrible front of lightning. The big one got struck by lightning. One big branch that's almost the size of a normal elm tree you see anywhere else And one at the church, and we had five eucalypts struck the same time. The eucalypts went up in smoke and we had to go and put them out because people ran and told us there was a tree on fire. The elms don't burn because of the moisture in the wood.
Mm.
And there was a big one, the Agara shipyard, same. And they said, you won't lose it because they don't burn. There's moisture in them. And we didn't. It blew the top off the one near the church. And the worst thing was it put a shard through the hole in the church roof. And we had to patch the roof. We had a couple of slate tiles and we got a tree surgeon out with a thing. And our builder came out, jumped in his little lift and went up and... We've patched. But that's just an interesting thing. So apparently the gum elms don't burn.
When was that?
2019.
Thank you.
For the record, could you describe the church and the elm walk that leads to it, Linda? Because it's quite unique.
Oh, right. But, so do you want to go right back to when a few of the early things...
Right.
Well, I think we better go back before they built the church.
This
is important. Now, when they...
Sorry.
We're working, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. I'm just trying to find out the time.
It's really 6:15.
Okay, so we're going back at 6:15.
Yeah, sorry, we've jumped.
Yeah. No.
The interesting thing was, now, the original road to Inverell actually is not where it is now. It came down just past, at the end of the Elm, an avenue going down there near the cricket field. It crossed over the creek in front of the older house where it was quite level there and they could get across, otherwise it's a bit steep. And went across towards Stratton and then on to Inverell somehow. I don't know that end. But so when they settled here, the older house faced the main road. So the house is built facing north to the... And you entered from that road.
Now, is that part of the house that we're in now?
No, from that door up.
Right, yes.
This was an addition from here through the dining room and then the billiard room.
But the part of the house that, as it stands now is part of the original Everett house.
Oh, no, we had two slab houses. One slab house and then they built another one in the, I think it was 18, in the 1880s, and then the brick one. That little bit.
Yes.
1903. Mm-hmm. And the billiard room wing through here was 1912.
Thank you for that.
So they entered the garden through up towards the garden fence, which is not far. And the fence that's there, the metal fence, came out from Biddeston as ballast in a sailing ship. Came out. I think they got tired of painting it, and so are we. It's still standing, but it's rusty and it's getting a bit frail.
It's a magnificent fence. Could you describe it for the tape?
Oh, it's just...
About...
Oh, yeah.
2 metres?
No. Oh, it'd be a metre and a half, I suppose. With double gates and another small gate beside it. It's quite ornate. And we did paint it for Sally's wedding in white again, but now it's gone straight back to rust. I don't know quite what. Olivia, the next generation now. anyway, so you went through those gates. So, and then the garden is divided up by quite a large driveway, which they don't encourage anymore. But we find it wonderful and we'd never do away with it. But it was for the horse and buggy days. Aura does not have the normal round circular driveway, so the horses could drop their passengers off, continue round and... up to the sheds, etc. Aura's got double gates everywhere, and what we call our tea house now was where they drive through with doors at the other end, and that's where they drop off the sulkies or health drawn. We've got several, so they've all got different names there, and then the horses that continue on. So that is why it has been divided so much. Because we didn't have a circular driveway. So when we came, it was just dirt, and then an Aboriginal called Dave Williams, who worked here, was living here in the shearers' quarters, he collected the stones, and we put stones all around the drive. Well, he did, with a bit of our help, which really then gave us something to work from.
So... I just stop you there. Could you tell us what was in the garden when you and Bill came? And that which year that was.
Well, we moved to Ullr in 1884. We worked on Ullr and we lived in a cottage over the hill, the back of Ullr. And then when Uncle Tom had passed away and Nan Everett moved to Armidale, we moved here. And we were confronted by a... because the state had been divvied up a little bit for Richard, but no, don't put that in.
Just for the record, your late husband Bill was a nephew of Mrs. Everett.
Yes.
So he is still a connection to the original settlers.
Well,
through the
by
Everetts.
Marriage.
Yes.
We're not blood relations.
Right.
No.
So... sorry, I did ask what the garden was like. The mature trees would, of course, have been there.
They were there when we arrived. You can see here by these photos. That's the church gate over here.
Linda,
that's...
I can see, but the people listening, we have to use words for it.
Oh, well, they had the big oaks there around the garden. They got really old. This one, there was one... weeping willow, pussy willow. It's planted in the stump of a big acacia that was struck by lightning, and it was hollow. And the tree surgeon said to us, "I said, what are we going to do with that stump?" He said, "Plant something in it." Wow. So that was planted, the pussy willow. A lot of the trees were getting really old. Mrs. Everett was not a gardener; she was. Very much a lady. She bought lots of things and put them in pots where it was easy for people to water them. That was her gardening skills. The garden was much sunnier then because they loved dahlias. They had a lot of dahlias and veggie gardens that supplied veggies for all the people living in the various cottages.
Yeah, I'm taking you back a bit because even back in the early Everett days there was a big vegetable garden, I understand.
Well, they did plant vegetables in the letters. The last ones Margaret did. She talked a lot about what was growing in their garden, how they suddenly grew a potato and this and that. And they were, quite excited about it. But when by the time we came over towards the tennis court, there was quite a big garden. We didn't need it quite so big, just for the family. Bill used to be the veggie garden before we came here, but I think there was so much work for him to do. He was tired, and I think I concentrated more on other plants.
So when you came here in 1984,
yeah.
Did you and Bill have prior garden experience? Did you grow up
in a
gardening
family?
Well, my
mother was a keen gardener. She always gardened, loved to garden. So, and we didn't have anything, and we built a lovely, well, it's a very small garden. Because we didn't have much water over there. But we've always... And Mrs. Skipper was keen garden. She had a lovely garden. Dunley Vale, where we all grew up. So we're both keen. And when we came, we really did have to get Ullr economically viable. It had been let go a little. I think when they didn't have children, they didn't know what they'd ever do, so... They weren't working towards the future of the property or for family, really. So everything, fencing, dams, water, you name it, stock, it wasn't all that good. So since we moved on, we've done nothing but clean, straighten up, learn about the property, read all the documents that we kept finding and getting ourselves. It's taken years. Bill and now our son Tom's taken over and he's got the cattle and stock pastures running smoothly. We were really 70 years behind the most progressive properties, a generation really.
Leading you back to the garden records, I know, and you have shown me on previous visits, you have seed orders and plant orders going back a long, long time.
Yes, but I can't remember without finding them, but they're certainly recorded. But when we came here, because it really hadn't been landscaped, it just grew from whatever. There was a lot of cotoneaster and plants that were readily available at the time and those that spread. There was a lot of bamboo, tree of heaven, lots of plants that you really didn't want in a modern garden. So We had to simplify it because we didn't, there was very little water. We had to put a pressure pump on, and so we had to improve the water system. And I think we just trailer loads of cuttings were just taken out and straightened up so we could mow. That was an extra thing. As the lawnmowers got bigger, the little beds were a pain, so we just had to change the, and we used hoses to mark them out so we could turn comfortably without having to go too much backwards and forwards. Now, looking out the kitchen window is a prime example of what it was like. The chook yards were here, because this was the back of the house, as I was saying earlier. The northern side is now almost the back of our house, because everything now works around this front side. So we had to change this area here to make it from the very much the back side to the front of the house, where people then drove down and parked at that door there. So we had to move the clothesline, the chook yards. There was a little shed there that was falling over where they housed a little blue car, etc. So we sort of just took our time, just got the tractor with forks and ripped out all the bamboo. But I've always tried to keep a lot of the genetics. The palms, for instance, they had just, they were growing in the middle of nowhere in the garden, in the lawn, just, and they were a nuisance for mowing. So we kept the progeny little fellas and put them, and now we've got little areas of palm trees more together instead of just one there and one there, which we think has made a difference. Now, Ora is a very frosty garden. We're close to the creek on the western side of Gara, so it's known to be a very frosty area. We don't get the mist and low cloud that Gara get. So I've lost a lot of things that I would love to have planted, but the frost didn't like them much.
Linda, sorry, can I ask a question? From what you've just said, it's really unusual to have any palms at all here.
Yes, well, I don't know where...
So what are they?
I don't know where they came from, but we've just got them, and
they've survived, that's right.
Oh, and they seed everywhere. Sometimes I've just got to have a day and dig them, just pull them. Every time I see one, I've got to try.
Yeah. It was the 1930s thing around us in Armidale. Right. Almost every one of those timber cottages has a palm, and yes, they do seed.
Yes, they do.
And do you know which palm, where they're from?
No,
I don't know where they're from. No.
So the design of the garden as we see it now is basically your effort, Linda, and the stonework?
Yes, we put all the stonework we've added, except the fountain area that was there, but from the photos there was, the bamboo was coming up here on the southern side of it. Big yew trees, they'd got really old and falling over. There was a prunus which was... Look, it had got really old. There was a mass of daylilies, but they never flowered. So we cleaned all that out and started again.
So where did you get your inspiration from?
Well, I just think the visual idea. I think I went to a few garden things and they said always look from your window out. Just don't do it from... Design your garden from outside. Come inside and look out. Because it's very easy to plant, which I have done, trees in the wrong spot. But we needed to be able to mow and clean it up for snakes and things like that. It was just a tangled mess. So we just cleaned it out, and then we looked to see what we'd kept and decided what we could plant to go ahead again. So that's what we
did. I'll just take you back to the little church, because that and the outbuildings are such a feature of Ollera. Can you tell me how old the church is?
Founded 1876. The bricks were made on Ollera by George Vickery. He was a bricky. The pattern of the bricks, the way they laid them, it's a double brick wall, and it's colonial bond, which is brick, they lie them that way.
Yes, they have header bricks every second brick.
Yes, and it has buttresses that keep the walls straight. Now, the Horbury Hunt Club has made several visits here many, many years ago. I think it was Professor Robinson.
Because the church was designed by Horbury Hunt, who also designed the Armidale Anglican Cathedral.
Yes, and many buildings in...
in Armidale.
And Sydney. In Sydney, lots. Mm. And so he came up, he was very interested in, he thought the walls were leaning out, which often they did because of the weight of the pitched roof. The walls leaned out, and a lot of churches you'll see have steel rods going through with steel plates on the end with bolts, so they'd bolt them in to hold the walls in. But we've got buttresses, and apparently when they measured them all, he brought a whole group up, all with pens and paper, etc., and they measured everything up, and they said we were pretty good. But he gave us $2,000 to which to apply for a heritage grant. So we did repairs to the little bell tower and improved the gutters and downpipes and things like that. Yes, so that was really very welcome.
And between the house and the church is a lovely row of elms.
Yes, elms, yes. And they took a caning in the drought we're talking about, the 2019 drought.
Mm.
And we spent a lot of money getting a tree surgeon in, and you'll still see the pile of rubbish up there, because there was a lot of dead wood. But we've rectified them. We spent a considerable amount of money. But they're looking healthy again now, yes.
So obviously over the years you've had to have a lot of tree specialists in to maintain these trees. Have you lost many through natural causes?
Yes. Lightning strikes has been one. We've lost several from lightning strikes. But mainly, now when we came, there were very few conifers, a couple of big radiatas, and I couldn't work out why there weren't any small conifers in the garden, because in the winter it looked bare, because I didn't have as much shrubbery as I've got now. And I went a bit mad and I bought lots and planted them and et cetera, et cetera. And the drought, they all died. So I think that is a lesson, that they don't, we're on trap saw.
Right, so
no,
it's...
not trap.
Basalt?
No.
Granite?
Granite? No. Einstein.
Oh, right, yes.
Sorry.
We went through the wall.
Sometimes I can't recall things as quickly as I could. Yeah, it's hard.
Yes.
And the big oaks, I think, and elms, can their roots can... cut through and break through the subclay because there is moisture under there. If we dig a hole here, the post hole digger, it'll fill up with water, as we know from the cemetery when we've dug holes up there. And in a wet time, that water seeps in.
Just for the record, can you describe the cemetery here at Ollera Station as well? Because that's very historic.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, it started in 1843, might be 45, I just might have to check that. That the first guy that was buried there, and it has grown. We have now over 400.
Right.
It's a private cemetery. You can only be buried there if you have a direct descendant, because that was a decision made between, I think, Uncle Tom and the Gara Council at the time, which is probably a relief. Because it has grown considerably. And there's some very historic graves up there. There are a couple of Battle of Waterloo veterans. Edward Hill, that was very involved here at Ollera and Tenterden, his grandfather was a poet laureate who wrote Goldilocks and the Three Bears.
Oh.
He's buried there. And I actually have... a self-portrait.
Of him?
Hanging in the next room, Lee, if you wanted to visit around the corner.
And, of course, all of the Everett descendants are there too.
Not many, no. The only Everetts that are there, John and George Everett, the original two, they went back to England. They're buried in England.
Mm-hmm.
Edwin remained a bachelor, and he is buried there. So Uncle Tom, they didn't have children, so their wives are buried there, so the skippers have ended up being in there.
Mm-hmm.
And David Curtis, who was Uncle Tom's nephew, his sister's nephew, he chose to be buried at Ollera. The others didn't.
And of course, a bigger village as well. You have the buggy shed, an historic shearing shed, a lot of slab buildings. Yes,
well, you see, when I talk about the original people buried up there, such as the blacksmith shop, which we still have, a slab out building which we renovated, and it's still got the original bellows and, what's in there. We've got some little posters there mentioning a few of the people that historically important in the old assembly that really were. It was a village. So you had a store, a blacksmith shop, etc. Now there's a family that had the first white baby, the Huttons. They're buried up there. It's just people that have worked on Ola over the years, many years. Ashman was the blacksmith. Farrell was took the big wool wagon to Morpeth and Grafton, Port Macquarie. He's buried there. Ryder, who had the pub at Wandsworth, he's there. So it was a village. They had schools. They had 27 shepherds, so there were little cottages. They built slab cottages built all around Ola, because it was, I think it was 89 square miles or something.
It's in the record, I can't
remember. So there were lots of people involved.
So it's a tremendous responsibility having the custody of this heritage.
Well, we took it seriously because he had left it to Bill, and we were extremely grateful. And if he hadn't left it to Bill, I don't know quite what we'd have done. Because his family eventually sold the family place, and Bill had a brother, Richard, but I wouldn't put that in the
papers. No. Taking care of buildings is one thing, but taking care of garden features is another, because they can be very, very ephemeral.
Well, that was my domain.
Mm.
I was very much involved in peps in the garden. Bill would dig a hole for me, but he'd go to a nursery and say, "Oh, we must have one of those." And I'd say, "Well, why don't we continue that same avenue up there?" But he liked Claret Ash or something, so he had to buy it. You know, he's a bit impetuous. Mm. So I think I've had probably most... the change, whether people like what I've done, is another story. But it had to be something that I could maintain without the help that we used to have. I've become very mindful of water over the years, because that drought taught me a lesson. And just as we get older, it has to be manageable.
Now, you mentioned that your contribution has largely been in understory, smaller shrubs.
Yes.
Can you describe some of the most successful forests? I can see from here several camellias.
Oh, yes. Actually, I didn't plant them. They were here, but they also had a lot of hydrangeas in this picture, which I don't seem to be able to grow. But I can't see the camellia, so I don't know when they changed that at some point. Yes, I've planted quite a lot of the weepy ones. I've got a horizontal elm that I bought from the Gara Nursery at the time. Had no idea what it would look like, but to me it's a wonderful feature. I have never seen one before. There was an old hothouse there where there's a little brick wall there, and we kept the foundation. And it's now grown right over that, so it forms a whole little shade. It's like a big umbrella, really. And then beside it there's a weeping elm going near the church gate, and in this acacia stump there's the weeping mulberry, which is very, very pretty in autumn. It's bright yellow. And then I've planted their maples, and they seed, so we've moved a lot of little maples around. I'm now just a bit of fun. I'm making them into a little chap, trying to just clip them around to make them shape to keep them small and not get too big. And that's a bit of my latest little thing I think I'm working on. We've also clipped a lot of English box shrubs, I guess you call them. They look like plum puddings when we came. Boring, just plum puddings. And there's one there that I went off to see someone's funeral. When I came back, a gardener who was helping me with it, a nurseryman, He discovered that all the lower branches had rooted into the ground. So he left those, so we've got the little circle around, and then he cleared the couple of stems, and then we've allowed the topiaries to grow out. Mm-hmm. But actually, it is all one shrub, which is quite an interesting. And then I did that with another couple elsewhere, because they are just very dark, dense plants, and by opening them up and making a little, having a little bit of fungus and shape, it gives the garden a little bit of a natural feature. I haven't got that many statues. It's more a garden just of different plants. I love everything anyone gives me, and I have to find a home for it. Most of them survive. I've got an interesting big Sasanqua died, I don't know why, and now I've got a creeper growing up in it. Yes. Out the window. It's just the little Virginia creepers, I think it is. Just growing up along the branches. So I don't know what's going to happen when it gets to the end. We'll worry about that when it hasn't quite got there yet.
And there's a delightful woodland walk too as you go down. Could you describe that for us?
Yes, you can walk down between a couple of little paths. Going to the church, there's a small path that heads down, and that was heading towards the veggie garden. And there's a wisteria walk, which we had to put the new posts in. But because we're frosty, I've only ever seen it flower twice, and when it does, it was absolutely unbelievable. The frost always gets it right at the wrong time.
So the wisteria was planted before you and Bill came here?
Yes, very much so. And then from there, we did change the fence line there a bit, and I've got a little sort of it is a bit like a little area there that I'm just letting go natural to make it easy. And had a funny little areas that we just decided to plant the lawn. It was annoying for the lawn mowing, so we just planted that out with some different things.
A lot of hellebores, as I remember, in that area.
Under the what's that one called? That's the I do like what's that one, Lynn? Crab apple. Yes. Gaiowensis. Yes, under there and under the big oaks and oaks, I've got lots and lots of help. They do extremely well. I have very few weeds. I do use product to spray around the fence. So grass seeds are not encouraged to get in, and I do spray it around the... I don't do digging. I very rarely dig. And I don't have weeds. I think if you get onto the weeds before they spread, they don't spread. And I've got ground covers. So I think I've had it in mind all along that whoever followed from me, they may not be gardeners, would not want the work. And so I have planted shrubs and a lot of ground covers, which are not a lot of work. There are some areas that I actually don't even touch, don't even water. They just do their own thing, and I try and put a bit of autumn colour. I do the mowing myself, so when I mow, I often think that area wants colour, it wants something, whether it's a tree or a shrub. And I think I do a lot of planning in that respect, because I like to enjoy my mowing. So we've planted, going up to the church outside, there are a lot of pin oaks going up there. There were liquid ambers, which originally, the first one we got came from my mother's garden. It was a gift for her. She was Tasmanian, and it was given to her. She brought it up from Tasmania, and it had little ones grew, and I've taken those off and struck them. The little one there, I've got to do.
So the liquid ambers were planted by you and Bill.
Yes.
And they're now... 40 years old?
And
magnificent trees. How tall would they be, roughly?
Oh.
I'm asking you because I can't guess.
They're not huge. All these trees you see out the window here we've planted.
And you've been fortunate to live here for long enough to see them into maturity.
Yes, I have. Except that golden cypress, it was so sick-looking that Bill was going to cut it out, and one of the men said, oh, no, I think you could leave it. It's grown. It has survived.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, conifer that survived, which surprised me, we put them all around the wool shed to hide some of the old sheds to and to give us a bit of protection from the southwesterly wind. They're not dear to us. You'll have to leave some of this out. You know, what's that other little pine that went mad way back then?
Leyland cypress.
Yes. And they have survived the drought.
Mm.
And they haven't been watered, but they actually did survive, which surprises me. Mm-hmm. Where we did plant what's the other, the green one about the same as that?
Torolosa.
Yep. Going to the cemetery, and they've all died. They didn't make it.
Now, there's a lot of exotic trees outside the garden here at Ollera too, across the paddock. They date back to the Everett's time.
Yes, they elms.
Yes.
The elm scrubs are down, as they call them, scrubs. Yes, a lot of elms, and I suppose they have suckered and moved on. I guess in those days they had picnics down by the creek a lot, I guess. Mm. And we've planted... Most of the others, Bill and I, have planted outside, except for the elms. I think we've planted pretty well all the others. Mm-hmm. We just went a bit... Yes, we're trying to protect it from the southwest wind and a little bit from the summer heat. But one big help too, we have designed it so that sheep can graze all around the house. There's no fence that cuts them off. And they keep it short now for snakes and fire. So that's helpful. Because we don't have to mow outside any longer.
And over the years, you have been extremely generous with your garden and sharing it with the public. I think you were one of the first gardens to open in the area with Australia's Open Garden Scheme.
Well, I think we were when they first started in New England. I think we were, yes. Well, there are many others as well. But that we did probably have our first big opening then.
That would be about 1992?
Oh, gee, I can't remember. But we also have had bus tours and fundraising. I think we had the vehicles. Paul Moxon brought all the vintage cars here. And we had a fundraising for the Royal Flying Doctor. It was a doctor. We've opened it up for the school. Along with a few others. Oh, and bus tours from here and there. The Botanic Gardens in Sydney came, a few from Brisbane. People that are just interested in gardening.
Yes, and you had a very successful open weekend just recently, I believe.
Yes. Well, the weather was perfect. That helped. And we hadn't had a frost, which is, I cannot believe, never before in history, it's gone so long without a frost, I'm sure. And we still haven't had one, which is amazing. People came from elsewhere, not the usual ones that have been here before over and over again. People I'd never seen, and others said I don't know who they all were. They were extremely well behaved, the organisers for this the money was made to beautify Gyra, for interesting things in the Gyra Main Street or something. And people just came from elsewhere. I have no idea who they all were, but they were very respectful, and the girls did a wonderful catering job. But I found a few facts. I had to polish up a bit of my history, and I was reading through all the letters, and I discovered there's a steam engine here at the wool shed, and I always wondered how they got it up the Moombies, for instance.
Mm.
And I was reading, and they said, well, one similar, it was going to another property, they required 30 bullocks.
Mm.
So I presume that's 15 on each side. We've got how many horses and bullocks pull the wool wagon, and we've got photos of that. But we didn't have one of the... Because they used to take that engine across the creek somehow, with bullocks, because I think they'd have wheat, you know, did things... I don't know what they did with it, but... It has been pulled around, apparently. So that was an interesting fact I found. I always find a few extra things. Now, we have bought the church back. Uncle Tom vested at the Anglican church because he didn't know who was going to inherit or get Ola or what would be sold or what. In about 1954, I think, he vested it to them. And it was in their possession. We always maintained it, so they didn't do too much. We got our Christmas money, but But we always maintained it, and it's come back to us. I think it might have been about just after the pandemic, it might have been about 2022. So it's back in Ola's ownership again now.
And I think you have had open gardens to benefit the church maintenance too.
Yes,
which is...
because when we sent the money in for the open garden scheme, they always gave a percentage back, and we always put that into our church account to keep a little bit of funding, because anything else went to the... We didn't declare.
It's wonderful to see, you know, such great preservation of a garden. Is there anything I haven't asked you, Linda, that you would like to have included? I will put links on the tape back to the Margaret Rodwell's thesis about the history of Ollera.
Can we just... How about if we just turn that off now?